It was all going so well until Mick Schumacher put it in the wall. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Bom, bom, bom. And then all hell broke loose. Welcome to episode 334 of Motorsport 101. Or as I like to call it now, D-Day, part one. Like, Endgame is next week. It's a double release. Hi guys, I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to the show. I'm your not-so-friendly neighbourhood host, given how this show is probably going to go for the next hour or so. But Saudi Arabia was an adventure, a trip, an experience that had to be seen to be believed. And the racing wasn't bad either. Or was it? I don't know. We've got a lot to get through here. This is going to be a lot. While me and my fellow co-hosts brace themselves for impact again. RJ, how you doing, buddy?
I got to tell you, that was a... I've been through some busy weekends in my, I want to say, like, one-fourth, one-third of a season being back as an accredited Formula One journalist. I got to tell you, this weekend was something. I don't know what it is, but it was certainly something.
It is something indeed. Where do you even start on that one? King, how you doing down there, buddy?
Oh, man. I feel like... I feel like I just woke up in the middle of a jungle, and instead of Fortunate Son playing, it is Rick Allen on repeat saying championship implications.
That's not Def Leppard drummer Rick Allen. That is NASCAR broadcaster Rick Allen. Congratulations to NBC Sports on their new improvements in broadcast booth, the IndyCar series, because the driver analyst role opposite Townsend Bell is now free agent. It's now a racing seat as of today.
Yeah, the NBC broadcasting booth is down 1 foot fetish.
Paul DeResta, Paul Tracy, commentators named Paul being so bad at their job every single week until they're untenable.
Oh, the tea is already
Let's
piping.
Be nice. Like, Let's be nice. We didn't have to go there.
Paul DeRest has already got a successful racing career to fall back on. He's fine. He doesn't need our defense. We've already had the gasification of Martin Brundle this year. We're not extending that to Paul DeResta.
Well, I love that King is on the perfect backdrop in all of this. Just having a large cup of tea in the background because it's already piping and we're 4 minutes in. 4 minutes! We haven't even talked about the racing yet.
Cam, how's it going down there? I'm Cam. You know, these are the weekends where I'm really happy I'm not an accredited motorsports journalist. Because if I were, I would have had to buy a water cooler for my keyboard.
A hose. Just hose this bad boy down. I got every 500 words. Oh boy, it's a lot. And we have a lot to get through here. We've got the fourth major flashpoint between Hamilton, Verstappen, and a bunch of stewards, and everything that came alongside of it. Because we are going into this weekend, I should say, championship finale, all square. 369.5 points each.
Not so nice.
No. That's not what we're going to do. Okay? We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about everything to do with those incidents, including the stewarding, including the track itself. All of that. We'll be talking about an annoying deal off the track as well for Mercedes and the head roll in that. And at the end, we'll probably talk a little bit about who we think will actually win this championship. May the good Lord help us all. In the meantime, here's the place you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you'd like to follow our personal handles, you can at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at Max Verstappen 33 to send all your hate mail in that direction. Oh, Cam's available as well. CBucky917. You get to see him on that. We're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. Or on our website, motorsport101.com, where if you want to hear even more about Saudi Arabia, I wrote the biggest race review I've ever written about anything on there. Motorsport101.com. Check the blog section for that. We spruced the place up a little bit. It's quite nice. You'll like the new place. Content. Heaps of content. You'll love it. All of that's on there. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio episodes. $10 for the video version and access to the supporters club. You can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. I can put this off no longer. Ladies, gentlemen, friends outside the binary, welcome to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
22nd round of 23. We're at Jeddah Corniche Circuit, Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. We had yet another incredible highlight on Saturday, as Max Verstappen had one of the best qualifying laps going until he didn't. He hit the wall in the final corner. Lewis Hamilton ended up leading Mercedes 1-2 in qualifying. Verstappen had to settle for third. Average speed around this new kind of street circuit. It's a street circuit, but it's not made of actual streets, but it's got plenty of blind corners. 157 miles per hour, putting it ahead of every other track not named Monza. If you want to know what this place is going to be like. So, people were cynical, as usual, that the racing wouldn't be great. And it wasn't great for the first, I'd say, 9 to 10 laps. I would say Hamilton, Bottas, Verstappen all the way through the... Right up until the point that Mick Schumacher hits the wall, brings out a safety car. Mercedes double stacks their cars in the pits. Red Bull keeps Verstappen out, only for the race to be red flag, giving Verstappen a free change of tires. This was right after Verstappen was worried that Valtteri Bottas was backing him up, trying to prevent him from pitting under the safety car, which actually turned out to be a blessing in disguise. But hold that thought, because we're going to get a standing red flag restart. Hamilton beats Verstappen in a turn run, but Verstappen cuts the corner to retake the lead, only for an enormous pileup behind them. Charles Leclerc gets pushed in the wall, hooks Sergio Perez behind them. Nikita Mazepin slams the back of George Russell. That brings out a second red flag. Verstappen changes tires again, and we get radio of race director Michael Massey offering Red Bull a behind Lewis position grid drop to avoid a steward's call, and all parties accept. So Esteban Ocon, who was second on the track at the time the race was called off, took the second restart on pole. And then they actually went going, and Hamilton, on his medium tire, passes Hamilton and retake the lead. Verstappen holds off Hamilton on his medium tires until a virtual safety car, shitload of virtual safety car, puts Hamilton into an excellent position on lap 37. Hamilton goes around the outside into turn one. Verstappen forces both himself and Lewis off to defend the position again. Race control calls for Max to hand the place over without notifying Mercedes. But lacking info, Lewis holds off. Max touches the brake just enough to force Lewis to pass, and both cars hit. Both cars suffered damage, but after more swap shenanigans, the stewards slap Max with a 5-second time penalty for leaving the track and gaining a lasting advantage to defend his position. Lewis passed him to take the win. This is arguably the most chaotic of his 103 wins, with Verstappen finishing second despite 15 total seconds of time penalties. 5 for leaving the track at turn 1 and 10 for the brake check. Valtteri Bottas, resident fun ruiner in his penultimate weekend of Mercedes, takes away Ocon's podium by a tenth of a second in a drag race over the line. And that's probably the last we'll talk about this. It's probably the last we're going to talk about anything else that happens outside of this bubble of Verstappen v. Hamilton. Folks, I put 45 minutes on the clock because I expect to talk about this for a while. What do y'all make of all this between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen? Was this the most ill-tempered Formula One Grand Prix of our lifetimes?
Oh, man, I can't remember the last time
up there
an F1 Grand Prix was this chaotic in, say, the last 15 years.
It's up there. It's in the conversation. What a mess. what a hot mess this was. And one of the tweets that I put out during me watching this race live, I still stand by. I said the inmates are running the asylum, and that's kind of what this race felt like. It felt like the two best racing drivers in the world, you know, that these two are such a country mile clear of everybody else at this point. It's not even funny. Like, it just felt like the red mist descended for all parties. And it's... I don't even know what's the best way of me describing it. It's like... I'm not sure what the right angle of attack is, because it's all just one great big clusterfuck.
This was the sickos race of the year.
Yeah.
This was, and it wasn't just limited to Formula One, because F2 was disastrous on Sunday.
Formula 2 was a mess. Teo Pourchaire and Enzo Fittipaldi had a bad wreck at the start of what was to be the feature race. Mm-hmm. Teo's largely fine. Enzo broke his heel. That wasn't on the track itself. That's down to, you know, Formula 2 cars stalling on the grid. And we could have a long discussion. Yeah. We could have another long discussion about Formula 2 machinery, vehicle quality control. But just put
LS engines and Tremec paddle shifts in the back, and then you fix F2.
Just put an anti-solving.
Get well soon.
Yeah.
Get well soon for both of those. Obviously, the 72G crash, really nasty one, and glad that they are, by and large, will recover. Okay, but the stewarding was pants. It was pants from the very first safety car when Mick crashed, and we ran a few laps under safety car. As RJ mentioned, Bottas backs Max up into while going towards the pit lane, which is a punishable offense. We've seen teams be punished for it before, and it was not even noted.
Was not investigated at all. How does that not even get investigated?
Yeah, because Lewis got thrown out of a window for it in Bahrain, I want to say 2018, because yes. Even though he was within margin for the VSC, because that was kind of the operative thing here, you can't deliberately back people up.
Yeah, he backed up Ricardo, I think it was.
It was. And then we run a few laps under safety car, and only after, I think, 4 or 5 laps under safety car do... F1 realized that the barrier, the Tech Pro triple layer there at that section of the track, is damaged to the point where it needs to be repaired, and we go under a red flag. Rightly or wrongly, depending on your side of the fence, handing both track position and a free tire change to Max Verstappen.
Like, you can still hear in the background Lando Norris complaining about this rule that he absolutely despises.
The data here. It looks like Hamilton, Bottas, Leclerc, Norris, Stroll, Latifi, Alonso, Perez, and Russell, they all pitted under the safety car, and then everybody else got a free tire change. I don't have a problem with the rule as it is, because, you know, there is always the risk you can run over debris in the event of an accident like this, especially of a track blocker like the second incident we have. So until we find a better solution, this is the one we got, and I'm fine with it. You know, the brakes.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem is not that, you know, the red flag tire rule, it's how long it took for the red flag to be deployed.
Oh, yeah.
And
exactly. That was a running theme this weekend. Every FIA decision seemed to take forever to not just go to the stewards, but then come back with a final decision.
We've been through this the last couple of weeks. It's like we're having to wait till the day after for stewarding decisions that could impact the grid of a race. We saw it at Sao Paulo. We saw it in Qatar.
Well, like, I think a lot of this, in terms of the track status changes, is down to not the FIA itself, but the marshals, who the FIA don't provide, is provided by the local organizer. And for this race, they flew in 400 marshals that normally call the Bahrain Grand Prix, which, by my estimate, isn't even
half the amount of marshals you would need to operate a circuit like this. So most of the people were provided by the local Saudi automobile club, and it's based on how they were responding to incidents, it was clear that they were not fully prepared for the fastest ever street race in Formula One history.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, the people on the ground need to be trained properly, and they need to know how to respond in the case of an incident. And not only did this track have just unbelievable speed, I mean, the speeds on Saturday in qualifying, there were corners that were almost unbelievable to watch with these second to last race for these big, stupid cars with all this downforce. They put on a hell of a show around here. And we saw it through multiple debris cautions where it seemed to take forever to get the track cleared.
Shout out to Sebastian Vettel for locking wheels with seemingly everybody. You know, everybody in the midfield was just so attracted to the side pods of Sebastian Vettel. It was young guys like Yuki Tsunoda, whether it's old man Kimi in his ultimate race.
Yuki, what the hell was that? You were having a good weekend, too. What the hell was that? Vettel didn't respect the meatball and was shedding debris quite consistently for after that incident.
It was not a good weekend for Aston Martin. I don't know. No. I don't know how Lance Stroll almost salvaged a point out of this.
Yeah. Seb was running healthy points until the incident with Tsunoda.
Yeah, don't remind me. look, we had three VSCs in the middle of that for debris. The last one in particular looked like it was taking about four laps off the clock to fix it. Like, I don't know what that last one was all about either, because like we could see where the debris was on track, and like Fernando Alonso was calling for a full safety car because there was apparently that much debris out there during that final VSC we had. And of course, that's what inadvertently set up the one on lap 36 that really put Hamilton in range for his big pass attempt. And of course, maybe a lap that will define this championship by the time it's all said and done. I mean, let's get to the big one here, fellas. I mean, what did you make of Hamilton Verstappen and how lap 37 went about? First of all, turn one. Because that one, I think that one was a lesser version of what we got at Brazil.
Like, yeah.
It was clear from what I saw, there was a bit of gamesmanship at turn one for Max Verstappen. Where he knew that him and Lewis were going to go wide, but the moment that he got clear of Lewis's front wing, he just immediately darted for the exit, like just cut across the runoff right towards the run to three.
Yeah, and that's kind of the operative issue here. It had happened earlier with the aforementioned plea deal. I guess we can get to that later, but it didn't really have such an effect on the race. Look, racing drivers are paid to push the limits, and the FIA did not punish Max Verstappen for doing what he did at Brazil. So there's no reason to think that doing that same move again was going to net him a penalty, because that's the line that the FIA has drawn here.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what happened in Sao Paulo was rendered irrelevant because Hamilton would get it back again. And the same thing happened here today.
Well,
exactly.
With a little more twists and turns along the way.
Yeah. To say the least.
Oh, God. The call to have Max hand the place over, I don't have a problem with. I think really shouldn't be able to defend your position that way. And I think Max would have been fine if he didn't just, you know, he pinned Lewis out there, he made the right move, and then cutting across turn two was just stupid of him, because he had to have known that was blatant corner cutting.
Yeah, he had a perfect restart after the second red flag. Like,
it's straight to the top of the Scotty nominees.
It's on the border of a block pass that's like, it's just a little bit short of the line, but it was still really good. And think, wow.
Damn. Yeah, I don't think Hamilton had him anywhere near as banged to rights as he was in Brazil. He had to do was just take turn two normally, and he probably forces Hamilton to cut the corner, and he's still in front. I don't think Hamilton had him. I really don't. I think Verstappen, if anything, probably overdid it when it came to defending that position.
Exactly.
As far as I'm concerned. If anything, it's almost like he didn't trust himself. It was kind of weird for a guy that's got an exceedingly amount of...
They made a little bit of contact tire to tire when I think it was Max's right rear to Lewis's left front.
Sure.
And that could have put Verstappen wide, but I still think he overdid it. And then we get to
the
incident.
The check. How Formula One shocked the world.
Well,
we're not race talking control, about the check yet.
Race control hands down the call to Red Bull and Max. You need to get the position over. You gained a lasting advantage at turn one.
Yeah.
And Max, the wily young fox that he is, decides to try and let Lewis by before a DRS zone to minimize the damage of what that handing the position over is going to do. He backs off. He initially stays to the right, but was somewhat center of the track by the time Lewis got there. But there was still plenty of room on the left for Lewis to go around. And Lewis slows down and refuses to pass him. Because he has not been told by the FIA that he's being handed the position.
Yeah. And I do find it hilarious when he eventually does get told that Max is going to give up the position. It's after this incident took place, and he's about to take the corner. He's about to take, you know, the last corner, turn 27. And it's like, yeah, this is really useful now, guys.
Yeah. Everyone was kind of late on the draw there outside of Red Bull's camp. And you have to think going through Max's head at that point, I'm complying with race control. Why is he not passing me? Gets on the brakes a bit more, and Lewis runs up the back of him, breaking Max's diffuser and damaging, I believe, his left rear tire, and snapping the right front end plate off of Lewis's front wing.
Yeah, right. That could have ended much, much worse than it ended up doing. Like, I'll tell you, me and my partner both screamed when we saw them hit.
The rest of the world, RJ.
Yeah, because at the time we're thinking, wow, Max Verstappen has gone full sicko mode. And it turns out... It looked like it, and with hindsight, we now know that this was largely the product of continued gamesmanship, a communication breakdown. Looking back on it, I don't think it was terribly malicious, but the fact that the fact that people were willing to jump to that conclusion probably does not reflect well on Max Verstappen, though I also think that's his reputation.
I think that's just your tribal shitty fan bases defending or attacking based on which side of the fence they're on. We have concrete data on this.
We wanted the footballification of Formula One. We got it.
Yeah, Max, now keep in mind, cars are slowed down at this point, so these are not your typical Formula One numbers, but he put about 69 bar brake pressure.
Nice!
Nice! on the brake pedal to slow the car down, and it generated about 2.4G of force. If you know a little bit about F1 braking, and even factoring in the fact that the cars were slowed down, if Max was doing this to explicitly brake check Lewis, those numbers would have been higher, and we probably have a double DNF in the dirtiest way humanly possible in F1.
Well, I mean, let's say, which wasn't the case, he was intentionally trying to brake check Lewis. You obviously wouldn't try to make it look obvious.
Right. Yeah. They're trying to style this shit out. If you really are believing that Verstappen has fully embraced Lord Voldemort's Book of Dark Arts, then he's not putting... Like, he's putting a hell of a lot more than that much brake force on the pedal. Look,
Well, more than that, I don't think he never slows down if that's the case. He waits for Lewis to try and catch him properly and then puts him off at turn one.
Yeah.
But it's weird because it's not 2.4 all at once. He does slow down, then dramatically gets slower.
That's the operative thing here, is that Max slowed down and was trundling along, I think, at about 150 kph. And Lewis slowed down and refused to pass him, and they're both sitting there for about 2 seconds just crawling relative to the speed that a Formula One car usually hits.
That's a bizarre scene.
Though, logically, from, say, Verstappen's standpoint, where he lets off and he's slowing down, and you know that Lewis knows that you're both approaching the DRS detection point. And I think once he realizes that there isn't enough time for Lewis to pass me before that point, I need to slow down more.
Right. And I think that's exactly what causes this. I think both drivers involved knew exactly what they were doing. They both... Look, Verstappen is one of the best racing drivers in the world. Lewis Hamilton is a 15-year veteran of this sport. He's literally committed the same crime that they're thinking of committing right now with the DRS detection line. Remember Spa 2008, anyone? Where Kimi Raikkonen, where Hamilton pulled this exact same stunt and was given a 25-second time penalty for it? Hamilton was
There is no DRS at that time period. But that exact situation pops up about two laps later, and we're going to get to it. Yeah. So that happens. Max's diffuser is wiped out. Lewis's the whole left front of his right front of his front wing is destroyed. Max gaps him for a couple of laps, and then his damaged mediums just die off.
Yeah,
they catch each other at the same point here. Max lets him by, and then immediately repasses Lewis to get the DRS down the front straight.
Yeah. At this point, it's all just city buggers at this point, really, isn't it? It's all just like, oh, okay, what the hell's going on? You know, it's...
And then, the Spa 2008.
Yeah, and then I think it's the lap after that that Hamilton finally passes him for the win, and then that's...
Yep, and in that case, at this point, the win is already done, because on that second attempt where Max led him by and then immediately got the DRS... The FIA hands him a 5-second time penalty for not complying with race control, even though he attempted to comply with race control and Lewis ass-packed him on the run into turn 27.
And then
in the pass attempt that actually gets Lewis the lead on track, Lewis runs him out of road and effectively does the MotoGP block pass on him.
Yeah, runs him four wheels off. Nothing happened. Because sod the rule book at this point, am I right, fellas? I mean, it's all of this was a hot goddamn mess. I mean, we talked about it in the race we really started in this segment. Verstappen got 10 seconds afterwards for, you know, erratic driving. And a lot of people immediately leaped that this was an intentional brake check. And people that should know better, in my opinion, were going down the road if this was an intentional brake check. And I can't believe that people didn't read the full stewards report or even watch the action and could clearly come to the conclusion that there was more than enough mitigation going into the main incident to say that how on earth could anybody call this an intentional brake check unless
Talk about that stewards report for just a second. I'll paraphrase the key points here. They acknowledge and they gave us the data that Verstappen, after slowing down gradually, slowed down suddenly when Lewis was effectively right up his ass. But also talk about the fact that Lewis was actively refusing to allow Max to comply with race control because the FIA acknowledged that both of them were playing games with the DRS detection point.
Pause. Can I just say, how on earth is that deemed acceptable? So in other words, you've acknowledged in the report that Hamilton was actively trying not to pass him. And that was just deemed as an acceptable defense by the FIA. Well, how?
It's deemed as acceptable because, for the most part, Hamilton didn't know that Verstappen was ordered to give the position back. On that note, it means that he's just, under normal circumstances, him passing Verstappen is just a normal overtake, which he's allowed to just not do.
But then you can see how he gets to this awful mess of where the miscommunication has now caused. Like, the two drivers at question to now go full gamesmanship mode, thinking, Max is just going to try and get me back in the DRS line. And that's why Hamilton's probably backed off.
So,
and that's why Verstappen...
Because if there wasn't... Say if there was never a penalty for turn one, and we were under normal racing conditions, what would have happened? Verstappen crosses the line first, Hamilton crosses second, Hamilton gets DRS and overtakes him in the turn one anyway.
Yeah. But we didn't get that, because there was already an investigation hanging over Max's head. Red Bull knew what they were going to do. Merckx didn't know what they were going to do.
Yeah,
and...
like actively, Red Bull said that they were gaming the fact that they had a penalty to serve.
Yeah. They knew. They knew that Verstappen had crossed the line at turn one. Like, and normally, as we've seen countless times in this sport, if you give the position back, they tend to call it quits. You know, that's generally how it's gone. And Red Bull did that. And then all of a sudden, of course, because Merckx were too slow on the uptake, they didn't tell Merckx quickly enough, Hamilton's got into it in full cynical mode, thinking Max is going to hold me up so that I don't have to get DRS first, etc., etc. I don't know how anybody can know all of that and then immediately say that Verstappen's intentionally brake-checking a dude. You know, but again, I think that's all just biases and tribalism, dog shit feuds.
It's just a ball of biases, questionable driving standards from both drivers, because, man, you're running each other off the track, defending to the point where you both know you're not going to make the corner. The FIA allowing things two races ago that are now deemed not allowable. And being slow to hand down decisions directly from race control, although, to be fair to race control in this one, Massey's got to, he really needs to grow like 3 or 4 more arms so he can push more buttons up in race control so he can tell more people off, basically. All of the questionable stewarding and all of the driving standards that we've seen this year from both drivers have just boiled over, and the FIA has lost their handle on this.
You know, I really think Netflix is just punching up this Formula One season to add more artificial drama into it.
Yeah.
Why don't you add something more authentic, like fabricating a rivalry between Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz Jr.? Something a bit more organic for a change.
I know.
Yeah, and what we've got now, what the product that this has created, is that we are now going into the final race of the year on tied points with cars that are more or less equal enough that it's more setup and tire dependent rather than specific traits of the cars. And I really don't care going into this last race because it's just exhausting to watch. After this race, we were in our events chat in the M101 Discord, and we're all just sitting there feeling like we needed a cigarette.
Yeah. I was exhausted. I was just like, I can't take much more of this. It's like, I don't want to watch next week. I want to bury my head in my bed pillows and just forget this whole thing ever happened.
This race was a historically significant classic for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And
paraphrasing what I said over the weekend.
Exactly. I can't take credit. That's King's line.
It's like it was a situation where they crossed the finish line, the race is over, but like there were still some investigations pending. And for the most part, for the like first time ever, I watched the F1 post race show because I just wanted like some form of closure. I just like, please, I want to be able to move on to next weekend.
We were waiting for the people on the post-race show to show up in their all-black outfits to mourn the loss of Toto Wolff's Bose headphones. All we realized that those things seem to take a beating. Bose, give us an ad read so we can talk about how durable those headphones are. after the force of which Toto slammed them against his desk.
Yeah,
I have seen plenty of Toto blow-ups before. That's got to take the cake.
Shout out to Toki in our chat for saying, quote, "I legitimately had a cigarette." Don't blame you, Toki. Don't blame you at all.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to just briefly mention, I did have a moment of levity, because it was Will Buxton and Felipe Massa on the post-race show. At the start of the post-race show, Felipe Massa decided to, I don't know, intentionally or probably unknowingly, use the phrase, "Yeah, we're here, we're outside."
We're outside!
Oh my gosh. Beautiful.
I mean,
and if you want to know, sorry to cut you off, Dre, if you want to know whether the FIA considered Max's brake check an intentional move, he got what was effectively a non-penalty for the incident. It didn't end up changing the final result because, man, we have precedent for people taking out other people in title fights in F1 history, and it's a lot harsher than 10 seconds added onto your race time.
Oh, that's like, all your points effectively taken off the table. You still get to keep all of your other counting stats, but all the points don't matter.
Yeah, in terms of the race result, 10 seconds is meaningless. 10 seconds is important, as they do deem that Verstappen was at fault.
Yeah.
I don't see how you couldn't, to be fair.
Look, I was going to say, of all the stewarding, I'm fine with that. And I actually appreciated the explanation, and the wording they used, I think, was just about spot on. It was erratic, was the words they used to describe Verstappen's driving. Yeah. It was not intentional. It was erratic. And that's the point. If anybody actually read that report, as far as I'm concerned, there is more than enough mitigation to say that this is not an intentional brake check. The first paragraph literally says, "We acknowledge that Hamilton could have passed Verstappen." How on earth do you call it intentional after that? Like, you're looking for it because you want to make Verstappen the bad guy in this feud. I get it. And there is more than enough mitigation and more than enough personal biases out there, on or off the track, to make Verstappen the bad guy. I get it. He's never losing the contest of internet popularity against Lewis effing Hamilton. I completely understand that. But let's be fair here when we're talking about these dudes, because that is not a fair label to intentionally call someone a brake checker, because that is about the most damning words you could use to describe someone on a racetrack.
Yeah, it's going back to the whole point of after Silverstone, where every other comment was Lewis Hamilton wrecked his title rival on purpose and danced on his grave while he was celebrating over his hospital bed.
Look, an incident doesn't have to be intentional for it to be A, very fucking stupid, and B, erratic. This was another one of those. We got a penalty that was effectively a non-penalty, and we move on to Abu Dhabi. There's another piece of stewarding, or rather not stewarding, but race controlling, that I want to touch on before we move on.
Sure.
The plea deal.
Oh, boy.
Oh, brother.
Oh, boy. After the first of numerous restarts, Verstappen gets beat off the line, Lewis beats him into turn one, pins him out on the road where Max basically has nowhere to go, Max cuts the corner and takes the lead. Now, this would normally be a perfectly normal position swap, only one, Esteban Ocon jumped Lewis into second place.
Esteban Ocon, another winner of the red flag tire change lottery.
Oh, yes.
Tremendous.
And then Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez try to put two into one. It does not work. Another red flag.
Yeah. People come down on Leclerc for causing messy multi-car accidents, like in Austria. That one was not on him, because where is he else was he supposed to go? Clip through the concrete barrier to his left?
Yeah, he should have turned on no clip. Just a bad situation where you had Perez in the middle with nowhere to go. One of the AlphaTars, I want to say Gasly, kind of at his rear tire, and Charles pinned up against the wall. Just a bad racing deal.
Yeah.
So, you can't overtake people off the track. You certainly can't overtake two people off the track. We hear the radio call. The plea deal.
Essentially, what was the FIA's, what does FOM gain out of this by broadcasting that mess?
Sweet, sweet clicks.
Yeah, sweet drama. Clicks. Drama.
Because up until that point, you could have, like, if the race had played out normally, that would have been the high point of the race. Like, probably one of the more decisive moments. And for the most part, like, despite what Michael Massey has said about it, it is very unusual. Because I think a lot of people look at the FIA as, like, this big monolith where they have full and total control of, like, it's just race control, the stewards, and the marshals are all just one thing, and it's not.
No, and,
for the most part, Michael Massey has a lot of control over the race itself until he has to report an incident to the race stewards. And then it's in the race stewards' hands. They can take as long as they want or as briefly as they want to decide on an incident and make their own decision, which Michael Massey has to enforce. If it doesn't get to that phase where he reports an incident to the steward, he's fully within his rights as race director to do what he wants. And in a situation like that, he felt, you know, like a lot of the complaints that most of us have put forward in this episode and prior episodes about the stewards taking too long, he felt that if he just cuts a deal and the stewards say it's okay for him to cut this deal, they could just move on from this very quickly.
You know what this is? This feels like a lot of calls that I had at my old job where I used to work in the mobile phone industry, where if I felt like I wasn't getting a supervisor's assistance in a timely manner, I would just rush a deal. I would ask for forgiveness, not for permission.
No.
To do something if I just wanted to get this over with. And then it would cause like some messes.
Yeah, look, I had no problem with this. Like, I thought it was funny. I thought it was full.
I unironically think this was the best piece of stewarding that was done on that night.
No, I completely agree. I know it's very easy. I mean, I joked about it on Twitter. This was full Michael Massey going Harry Mendel or Noel Edmonds, depending on which version of is it owed idea or deal or no deal, essentially, by cutting a plea deal with Red Bull and Mercedes are all cool with it. Isn't this kind of what we wanted from stewarding decisions, to get it done in a quick and timely manner in what was ultimately deemed as a fair and valid solution to the issue? Like, isn't this what we all wanted after the last 2 weeks where we had stewards taking 24 hours to deal with relatively small penalties?
No, what we want is to dunk on one dude because he's not Charlie Whiting.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, there are a fair amount of things we could criticize Michael Massey for as race director. As far as I'm concerned, this wasn't one of them.
This in a sea of awful decisions, this was the one bright point.
This is not even in the PWI 500. Settle down, folks.
Yeah. And what it more or less amounted to was Max dropping behind Lewis for the restart, which he wouldn't have otherwise been able to do because there was a red flag for pieces of Haas Formula One cars strewn across the countryside. A common theme during this weekend, which has basically put Haas on the limit for spare parts for the year.
Christ. I specifically try to avoid using the phrase common sense because people don't generally have common sense, and that's why a lot of litigation...
They want common sense, but they don't know what it is.
There's like, that's why litigation never says common sense when it comes to things like health and safety and whatnot, because assuming that everybody has common sense, no, foolish. Not practical in real life.
Foolish behavior.
This was Michael Massey using common sense, and it created, I think, the ideal solution for all parties. As far as I'm concerned, if Mercs were cool with it, if Red Bull was cool with it, and the stewards were cool with it, they don't have to appeal to me to say that I'm
eventually
okay with it.
Cool with it. Like, they weren't cool with it at first as we started the bargaining process. But, you know, eventually everybody was cool with it. I mean, who doesn't like to see Esteban Ocon lead a race for 7 seconds? I know I certainly do.
That was nice. That was cool before he got dunked on the inside.
7 seconds, he says. Real Scotty contender, even though it didn't amount to much from Verstappen in turn one there.
Indeed. I mean,
it still counts.
Is there ways of improving what was going on for all of that? Because we've had a few rough examples in the last few weeks regarding all of this stewarding process. Is this just a communication concern more than anything else?
Like, honestly, like, that, you know, that negotiated deal was probably one of the best pieces of stewarding in the last decade, Massey Whiting or otherwise. I think a lot of this weekend is down to a lot of unpreparedness, where I think the practice of flying in marshals from other countries needs to become more commonplace. Because it's something that we have at Monaco every year, where people talk about the marshaling team at Monaco basically being an all-star team from countries across Europe. And I think that needs to become more commonplace on the F1 calendar, where it is the best of the best that get to officiate these races.
That's fair. That's entirely fair. I mean, that was probably a big part of this system that people are not going to talk about, because, as mentioned earlier, we were pointed at Michael Massey because he's not Charlie Whiting, and that's always good. That is a fight that Michael Massey is never going to win.
You are never going to win a fight. You're never going to win a fight, a popularity contest against somebody who passed away in office.
Yeah.
As cynical as that sounds, it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stewarding, as far as on the ground, like with the wall and everything, 100% agree with.
Yeah.
As far as the driving standards between our two title protagonists, I don't know, man. It feels like the line is not a line anymore. It is actually one large squiggle made with magic marker.
Yeah.
And it gets washed away and redrawn seemingly every weekend.
Yeah, go ahead, Dre.
No, sorry. Yeah, facts away. I was going to say, like, look, it's never going to be a completely flat line. There is always, like, there is 1,000 variables in Formula One that could affect something that could alter a rule when it comes to driving standards. Like, this brake check incident, in inverted commas, was the walking definition of that, where there was a lot of mitigation that probably reduced what would have probably been a much bigger penalty for Max on its own. Same with Hamilton at Silverstone. Verstappen was erratic going into that corner, which probably ended up saving Lewis to a degree. I don't think that was normally 10 seconds on its own. I was thinking, well, let's watch that incident, for example. I thought that was a drive-through penalty, personally. I thought it was bigger than 10 seconds. You see what I'm getting at here? It's never going to be a completely straight line. You've got to take these things case by case.
There's levels of mitigation.
Yeah.
But the two drivers have picked up the line and are jumping rope with it at this point.
I think they need to sit all 20 of these dudes down and say, look, this sort of incident is 5 seconds. This sort of incident is 10 seconds. You know, and go from there. Because we've had these meetings, and yet people have still come out of them, like Leclerc and Verstappen and Hamilton did after Brazil, and we're still no clearer as to what exactly a penalty is. And I know you're never going to get 20 people in a room to agree on anything, like between driving standards.
You can put 20 people in a room, and they're not going to agree. But they're walking out of the room, and none of them are agreeing.
Right, that's a problem. You need to sit down with these dudes. Sit down with either the drivers or the principals. Let the principals tell the drivers one way or another. You need more definition as to what inherits a penalty, because we've seen far too many erratic calls and non-calls. That is going to confuse everybody. It's going to confuse the drivers, as we've clearly seen the way this season's playing out, and it's going to confuse the fans that are at home watching. The fact that when I was writing my race review about this, I wasn't sure about whether what Max was doing was legal or not, because in my head I'm thinking, well, that's clearly leaving the track and gaining an advantage. But then the other side of my brain is saying, but he got away with that in Brazil, so are we sure that's a penalty now?
And you talked about it in your articles, that it feels like the penalty here was a makeup call for Brazil, where, again, probably should have been penalized, only you can't be doing makeup calls in the middle of a championship fight.
You can't, because you've moved the goalposts, and that can't work when there's so much at stake. It's
you know what incredibly... I mentioned the footballification of Formula One a couple of times in the way that we react to in the way that social media has become so tribalistic, which is why the best parts of Formula One Twitter are now just the converted college football people who just need something to do every Sunday morning. the ball sportification of Formula One is now we are having situations where referees are swallowing the whistle in a championship game because they don't want to affect the championship fight themselves.
Yeah, let them race, Michael.
Let them fight.
And officiating, here's the thing. Officiating to not affect the championship fight is affecting the championship fight.
Right.
Because you are changing the rules to which they adhere across the championship.
Yeah, like, the biggest issue is that this is commonplace across all professional sport, is that the teams decide what the rules are.
Right.
And they purposely, you know, push the FIA to have non-calls and quote a let them race mentality. While it's not as large as an issue in say the NFL or the NBA because we're not having one game where all the teams in the league playing one game at the same time.
Right. But I was gonna
say that'd be a hell of a sight.
Oh, it would be. But I was gonna say that's the problem. People forget. 3 years ago, the teams told the FIA to let them race. That's why the warning flag now exists.
Yeah,
we got the questionable. Said to let them race.
Yeah, we had the call in Canada, and sit on whichever side of the fence that you will on that. The FIA got publicly raked over the coals by everybody.
Huh?
And they changed the way they officiate Formula One as a result. And now we get this.
Yeah.
And we've had it in varying degrees since that call was made. And of course there's more examples that year and going backwards, but it feels like they've become both more common and more scrutinized in that time period.
Right, right. It's a mess. Good luck with that, trying to iron that out. And it's also to ask the question, fellas, what role do you think the circuit played in all of this? Because I mean, this Saudi Arabia track, it's a hell of a spectacle. It's a hell of a time trial in place, for sure. I mean, I've never been so grateful for onboard cameras in my life watching this Grand Prix weekend, but I don't think Saudi Arabia can hold up like this.
I made a comment on a certain blog. If this is the kind of track that Herman Tilke's son is going to keep designing, Herman should have kept the condom on.
Yeah, I think there. To me, while this track is very, very fast, I think like it did provide a certain level of spectacle into how fast it was. It should, you know, it's okay if it stays on the calendar. But there are two glaring issues. One, there are not enough cutouts in the wall. It's so hard for marshals to get.
The reason why we had so many long virtual safety cars is because marshals were having to run across the track to fetch debris in places where it's not safe.
Yeah,
now, that's Verstappen a big contributing factor to it.
But Verstappen had his Saturday wreck. He had to walk 300-400 meters down the road to get to a cutout. That's crazy.
Yeah, he had to leave the car, and that was at the last corner of the track. We didn't talk much.
The other issue... one and two. It is for like
a funnel.
It is a funnel. It's so much of a funnel, and it's not that dramatic of a corner in terms of like it is a very fast combination of corners for how slow, say on a start, you would be going into it.
King, here's the thing with that corner, because I thought about this seeing it in free practice. It's like they explicitly designed that corner to not be raced into.
Yeah.
Because, and this is at a track where the rest of the track other than this corner is effectively Baku Sector 3 extended out to be the length of Singapore.
Sebastian Vettel said it best. You don't want to build Suzuka with walls. Suzuka is great, but you wouldn't want to build it with blind corners across the whole place. You know,
no.
I'm not going to say this whole track is a waste. Go ahead.
I want to talk about turn one, turn two. It's like, because it's not a dramatic drop-off and the way it kind of, you enter the corner, it's very difficult to get alongside someone else who have an overwhelming top speed advantage.
Yeah.
And then there's no room for them to go other than to cut turn two.
Yeah, if they open up some of these
and
corners...
And turn two is so narrow...
Yeah.
...that you can't go side-by-side through it anyway.
Yeah, turn two's a one-line corner.
If they open up some of these corners, I think it would solve a lot of problems. I think it would solve quite a few of the problems. I think that's one thing that you brought up after the race. There are parts of it that are... It's still a salvageable course, of course. You know, Sergio Perez says he likes the curbs better than at some other places like Qatar. But, like, one thing I thought about is...
It has its high
like,
points.
It has its high points. But, like, we as a motor racing populace tuned in to watch the Music City Grand Prix, and the overwhelming opinion was that this track is this shit, this track is a failure. And the difference between that and this is that Jetta Courtney's circuit had about 9 figures pumped into it. I can tell you that the Music City Grand Prix had much, much less pumped into hosting that event.
Agreed.
And I'm not saying like that event, that either one of these events were like better than the other or something. I'm just saying that like you
they
know,
were
one
both,
had a lot more resources anyway.
They were both the cold fries at the bottom of the bag that you only found after you were done eating.
Yeah, Talladega Super Speedway in 1969 should have taught you something about giving yourself more time to finish the track before your first event.
Yeah, they still have recovery trucks on circuit on Thursday.
Well, let's not talk about that.
Let's talk about the fact
that in opening practice, we had 4 curb-triggered tire failures and had to go and modify a curb to prevent that.
Yeah, it's... Like it was slapdash to a degree, and that's not good. And what makes me a little bit more nervous is the fact that we race here again in 4 months' time, because Saudi Arabia is round 2 on the 2022 calendar. Very quick turn. No. We'll be back here again in April. So, yeah, they better get their shit together, basically. Because
I'm tired, boss.
Extremely tired. And the tiredness is not going to slow down, not anytime soon, because there was a very controversial branding deal that has to be talked about here as well.
Oh, Christ.
Because on
you want to talk about grand opening, grand closing?
Oh, yeah. Thursday, Mercedes announced a new brand deal partnership with Kingspan. Now, for those guys who don't know, especially if you're listening from the United States, for example, because they have a big American following, Kingspan are a cladding company. Their cladding was... I would say partly, but I'm probably being very kind here, largely responsible for the fire at Grenfell Tower in London in 2017 that killed 72 people. To make matters even worse, Mercedes star driver Lewis Hamilton has been very vocal over the years about his support to those families that were horribly affected by that tower fire in 2017. And the government-led inquiry into that tower fire is still going as you're listening to this podcast. 4.5 years later, it was the definition of bad optics for a Mercedes to slap a Kingspan logo on their car, and understandably, people were pissed about this. And it led... Go.
Did they consult Lewis before they made this deal?
Absolutely
fucking
not.
Holy shit.
The general gist that I get is that no, Lewis Hamilton was not consulting this deal. Which, of course, then you announce the deal like on the day that Lewis is giving his driver's press conference, and on top of all the other shit that he has to deal with, he now has to field questions and be partially held accountable, right, wrongly, or very, very wrongly, about something that's completely out of his hands.
It was
a lie. That's absurd.
Yeah.
In the UK, it was a national story. It was in the sports pages of the newspapers. The Guardian ran a featured story on it, and it was debated on This Morning, which is the number one daytime listed, show in the UK.
It wasn't listed under a Mercedes deal. It was listed under a Lewis Hamilton deal and a couple of headlines.
And that's what led to even more, you know, backlash on this, because the internet understandably immediately leapt to Lewis Hamilton's defense on this. He was questioned about it on Saturday, as if Lewis Hamilton is responsible for what sponsors his team brings in. It takes 5 seconds of logic to dismantle anything to do with Lewis Hamilton on this front. But of course, big British media decided to just slap Hamilton's name on it by association for easy viewership and easy clicks.
Or existing, more or less. Yikes.
It's bad, and I'm astonished that this deal lasted a whole Grand Prix weekend.
Yeah,
if we get a special diecast on this from Mini Champs, they have to put a Kingspan logo under the nose of a W12.
Because it's worth pointing out. Today, as we record this on December 8th, Mercedes put a statement out this morning saying that that deal could no longer continue. But Grenville United, the collaboration of the grieving families on the tower, understandably obliterated Toto Wolff via letter when this deal was first announced. And Toto was like, don't worry, we contacted them. You know, they said they only used like a small percentage of their cladding. I'll come down and meet you. We'll talk it out. And Grenville United was like, that's
our
not enough.
Party under investigation says we were innocent. More at 11.
Right. Even though the public inquiry information from it is already out there, that Kingspan knew exactly what was going on regarding that tower. And they knew their equipment was not fit for purpose. Their employees from within the company have said it under oath, you know. So Kingspan knew exactly what they were doing in all of this. So that was a piss poor excuse from Toto Wolff, as far as I'm concerned. And long story short, Mercs, you should know better. And I know there's a lot of people out there that love the Mercedes team, and understandably why. They have absolutely genuinely done a lot of good off the track as well as on it, and that deserves to be acknowledged. But at the same time, you ruin a lot of that hard-earned positive reputation when you're doing a deal with a company that was responsible for the deaths of 70 people.
Of course.
One that your star driver is associated with. Toto, you should know better. You really, really should know better. Like, Brazil was bad enough and you got away with that one. Like, it's incredibly frustrating, because it ruins the image of teams trying to do good. And it just makes me lean back into this old pose of these multi-million / billion pound companies are not your friends and they will do anything for a check. And I don't want to think like that, but I'm not being left with much choice. That's what's infuriating
about
it.
This is like on top of Formula One and motorsport in general getting into saying that they're doing all these things to be carbon neutral while getting into funny money that has been proven to be environmentally disastrous. And even when they figure that out, it's still all a scam. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just when something like this happens, it just looks like you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. And
it's so fucking
It's because
tasteless.
You are.
It's so
It's because
tasteless.
You're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Yeah. Incredibly frustrating from the team that has set a better example than all the others on the grid combined, as far as I'm concerned, and yet they are still guilty of putting their foot in their own arses, which is just highly disappointing to say.
Not everybody bats a thousand. You know, we get disappointed when it's people like we expect to set a better example.
And that's just that Mercedes has made an effort, which is a damn sight more than we can say for most of the sport, and this was just bad from them.
Yeah, objectively bad. One more question before we go towards the end of the show. It's the big one. I put it in the set list. You can answer it in one word. Your 2020 Formula One World Champion at the end of the season finale on Sunday in Abu Dhabi is... Don't all rush in at once, fellas.
Yes. Can't be yes, because there are tiebreakers in proceed. I said at the start of the season, I'm sticking by it. Hamilton wins the championship. Just.
King.
Hamilton wins the championship.
Cam? You've leaned on Red Bull the whole way. You've got to say
Max
Verstappen.
Max Verstappen.
I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton. I
feel very alone on this.
Yeah, it's going to be that Fox Sports college football graphic of all of us saying Hamilton and Cam saying Verstappen, and it's either, oh, this was predictable, or oh, damn, we look the thing. Up.
Here's the thing, right? I dread, truly dread, turn one of this race.
Me too.
There's only one reason why I said Verstappen, right? And nothing to do with previous form. I only learned today, we're on the softest compounds this weekend, and that might be a feather in Red Bull's cap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Might be.
Okay.
We'll just have to see how it plays out.
Look, I would, for the sake of sporting, I'd love to see a new champion. I would.
Sure.
It would be a vindication of all of Honda's efforts to build up their engine program. It's a shame that they're going to have to leave, but you know, their technology is still going to stick around. You know, I'll admit my
Maybe
personal
the real
bias.
Formula One world champion of 2021 were the friends we made along the way.
I wish I could kick you from this call right now.
Look, it'd be cool for the sport if Verstappen won the championship. It'd also be cool for the sport if Hamilton won the championship. But my gut goes with Hamilton, and my heart is kind of going that place too.
It's the safe pick. I can't blame you. It's probably this. If somebody put a gun to my head right now with one race to win for the title and said pick one to save your life, I would probably say Lewis Hamilton.
Valtteri Bottas.
About all that.
No, I don't know about that even, but it's a brave call, RJ. I'll say that. I wouldn't want to play Russian roulette with Valtteri Bottas and with the fate of the universe on the line, as Max Kellerman would
Bit
say.
Bit of the universe on the line. He almost ass packed Verstappen into turn one of that first restart.
He did. Yeah. Also, I love King's reference to the college football screen, because that's what me and the Kimes did when the Bills played the Patriots on Monday. Bad luck, RJ. Okay.
I'm used to it at this point. Mac Jones really is that good. Congratulations. Cam is set up to be he's set up to be Spencer Hall picking Bama when everybody else picked Georgia last weekend.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. You love to see it.
I'm either gonna look really stupid,
or you're gonna be a genius, and you're gonna,
or I'm gonna be
about
vindicated.
And either
all the
way,
way
you
back
don't,
to preseason testing.
Either way, you don't have to watch Driven.
Exactly.
Because
yeah,
I do
yeah,
not,
you know,
I
at
do
the
not
end of the
give
day,
Ferrari a chance to win this fucking race.
At the end of the day, I won because I didn't have to watch Driven.
Right. That's a good way to say it. Look, I warn you now in advance, listeners and viewers, if Verstappen wins this title, Cam is going to be the smuggest motherfucker on Earth next week.
I'm honest to God. Hand on my heart. I almost don't care as a result of the previous week. I just want this season to be over. So like we can go back to speculating on who's going to fuck up the new regulations.
In the words of Jay-Z, we don't believe you. You need more people.
I am enough people.
But before we get out of town real quick, first and foremost, get well soon to Fiat Pulcher and Enzo Fittipaldi. That was an awful Formula 2 wreck we had at the weekend. I'm glad that Enzo was relatively okay and hopefully will make a full recovery. He's been sharing videos from his hospital bed. Wish him all the best for everybody here. And sadly, this weekend was marred by the tragic passing of Sir Frank Williams at age 79. We spoke a lot about it in depth when his family left the sport last year, but what more needs to be said than, you know, an absolute legend and icon of this sport and the head of one of the greatest teams we've ever seen in this sport. And it really won't be quite the same without him. It already hasn't been, but now his loss will be felt even more. And, you know, our thoughts and condolences to the entire Williams family, the team, the loved ones, everybody at that Williams unit, because that is a true titan of this sport that has passed on. And, yeah, we salute you, Sir Frank, and the very best indeed to the Williams family on that one. Whew. So, one more round to go. The season finale for Formula One, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, this weekend, round 23 of 23. Well, 22, I should say, really, because we lost one, we didn't get Japan, damn it. But,
Well, we only kind of got Spa.
Yeah.
It counts. Which is the championship tiebreaker if they finish level on points. Sickos race of the year.
Oh, dear God.
I didn't realize that until right now.
Yeah. It's 9-8.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, dear God. Whatever happens this Sunday, we will break down everything that happens on next week's show. Pray that this ends up relatively peaceful. Please, dear God, keep it clean into turn one.
Yeah.
Please. I can't take much more of this, okay? Oh, so I'm setting up a prayer circle as we speak. But in the meantime, when I get that built, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, twitter@motorsport_101, our personal handles @Harrison101HD, @RJO'Connell, @CBuckley917, @RyanEricKing. Our website, motorsport101.com, for more written dialogue about everything that will go down this weekend, most definitely. And you can back us financially on Patreon if you really like us there. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 for the audios on early access. Videos for $10, as well as support us on top of our Discord. Fingers crossed we all get through next week. No promises. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, and Cam Buckley. Until next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
If you can't beat them, yeet them.
That's just paraphrasing it, if Gap Car.
That's another quote by Michelle Shoemaker.